The Columbia Workshop presents Someone Else by Lucille Fletcher with Martin Gable.
Elizabeth, my dear, you asked me this morning at breakfast if there was someone else. And I knew at last that you sensed a little of what had happened to me. I wanted to answer you then, but I couldn't. Now I must tell you, darling. There is someone else. Something else. And it's been driving me half crazy now for months. It's a madness, a nameless, terrible nostalgia of the blood. It's taken my mind from my work, from this house, from you. Yet it's not living. I still love you and only you more than anything in the world. I say in the world. For this thing that has me in its power is beyond you and me, beyond life itself. It began one rainy night, less than a year ago. It was your bridge night. You'd asked me to stay in New York and have dinner out. I ate alone, and then, since it was still early, I went for a walk down Madison Avenue. I got as far as 56th Street. Then it began to rain harder, and I stepped into one of the shop doorways for shelter. It was an antique shop, and she was in the window. Darling, have you ever been in a strange city? Pushing your way through a crowd and seen a face that was for a moment hauntingly familiar? Or have you perhaps glimpsed someone you were sure you knew and realized only after that person had passed by that it was someone who had died years and years ago? That was the feeling I had that night when I stared in through the glass at her face. And yet she was only a little porcelain figure, a Dresden shepherdess, no taller than my hand. It was a sad face, a face singularly full of indefinable tragedy. And though small, the features had a distinctness, an actual expression. No one looking on that face could ever forget it. But it was the old familiarity that haunted me. The overwhelming sense that I had seen that face somewhere long ago. I stood there trying to capture the association a long time after the rain stopped. I was still thinking about it when I came home that night to Maplewood.
Oh, is that you, Burton, dear?
Yes.
Come on in. We're just having refreshments. Ice fox cake and everything. I saved your piece.
Thanks just the same, darling, but I'm kind of tired. If you don't mind, I'll just go upstairs to bed. Somehow I didn't want to go into that living room and see the girls all sitting around the bridge tables eating gooey slabs of icebox cake. And for the first time in my life, I didn't want to see you. I wanted to be alone. All night long, the feeling of recognition kept recurring like a name on the tip of my tongue. But I got nowhere with it. Well, you know how it is with a little thing like that. At noon the next day, I went up to the store and took another look at her. The familiarity was even stronger.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
May I help you?
Yes. If you don't mind. It's rather curious, but you know that shepherdess you have in the window?
The Meissen shepherdess?
The one with the basket of pink roses and the three-cornered hat. It's funny, but I seem to have seen her before.
We got it from Europe 2 weeks ago. It came over on a convoy from England. It's from the collection of the Earl of Faversham.
I see.
It's a very rare piece. Would you be interested in pricing it?
Oh, no, thank you. Thanks just the same. Well, thank you for your trouble.
Oh, no, thank you.
I put it out of my mind. Until one night, 2 weeks later.
What time is it, dear?
I don't know. About 9:30.
Oh, good. I don't want to miss it. Oh, wait till I turn on the radio.
Miss what?
The Yummy Crackle program. Don't you remember? It's Tuesday night.
Oh, yes. I don't want to miss that myself.
It's so funny.
Darling, what's that?
What, dear?
That tune they're playing. I've heard it somewhere before.
Have you? It's pretty, isn't it?
Pretty.
Hmm. It must be on the Exploring Music program. That always comes before Yummy Crackles. They'll probably tell what it is in a few minutes.
I've heard it before. I'd heard this tune 100 times before, and yet I couldn't tell its name or where I'd heard it. I knew only that it was somehow connected with a palace, a blaze of candlelight, a gold staircase carpeted with red velvet, and windows, countless long, high windows, beyond which in the darkness fireworks like great roses were bursting. But most of all, it was connected in my mind with her. With that lovely, tragic, porcelain face.
You have been listening to Exploring Music. Another in the weekly series of concerts.
I'd heard it somewhere before. And she had been with me. In some way, it was associated in my mind with love and grief.
And excerpts from Aristide Dubois' pastoral opera, Diana and Hercules.
Aristide Dubois.
But, Burden, what's the matter?
Dubois. I know that name.
You're so pale all of a sudden. Here, sit down. I'll get you a glass of water.
No, thank you, darling. Whom do we know named Dubois?
Why, no one, dear. No one I know. It's just an 18th century composer's name. Well, I've heard it before on the radio.
Isn't that? I know a man named Dubois. He's huge, ugly. Has a wart on his lower lip, a little pig-like eyes. He has 2 daughters, extremely conceited with a violent temper. Let's see. Gosh, I don't know what's the matter with me.
You're tired out, dear. You're just tired out after the end of a long, hard day. Now you lie down for a while.
Turn it off, Elizabeth, please.
But, darling, I thought...
Turn it off. You hear me? Can't a man even think for a minute without having to listen to that loud...
There. I thought you said the program was funny. I thought you said you liked it.
I sat there with my head in my hands. Your words, Elizabeth, had no effect on me. I sat there, and it was just as if I wasn't sitting in the parlor at all. But somewhere else. Out in the night on a stone balustrade, perhaps. Or at the edge of some enormous fountain. I was sitting there waiting for something to happen to me. For someone to come. I was waiting for her. The next day I went back to that antique shop. As a man might go to a rendezvous.
Mr. Lafleur?
Yes?
There's a gentleman waiting to see you.
Oh, yes. Good afternoon, monsieur.
Good afternoon.
Is there anything I can do for you?
Yes. That shepherdess in the window. I want to inquire about it. I want to know everything there is to know.
You wish to purchase her, monsieur?
Well, no, I hadn't thought about that, but I just...
Because if you are interested, monsieur, I warn you, you must make up your mind quickly. There happens to be another gentleman very, very interested in that shepherd.
Another gentleman?
Yes, you have heard of Monsieur Fischer, Ludwig Fischer. He's the greatest collector of mice in the world, monsieur. And only this morning he was in here personally to examine that shepherdess. Why, at any moment...
You mean it's valuable?
Valuable? Monsieur, that little figure is one of the rarest pieces of mice in China in existence. It was made by the great mice and artist Kendler himself.
Kendler? Who's he? I never heard of him.
A very, very great artist, monsieur. He was the leading sculptor of all mice in first land from 1731 to 1775. This little piece was made sometime around 1775. You collect mice in first line, no?
No. As a matter of fact, I've never even heard of it before.
Oh, monsieur. What a pity.
I was just passing by this store the other night, and her face, well, it looked just like someone I knew. But I don't suppose if it's... That old, it could look like anybody I've ever known.
Oh, who knows, monsieur? Perhaps a painting of the period you have seen and forgotten. Or a well-known lady of the 18th century. The mice and artists sometimes use living models. But let us take her from the window and examine her.
No, really, closely. Thank you very much.
Oh, but... it's quite all right. Here she is. Faces are strange things, are they not? Resemblances? What makes resemblances? A nose, an eye, a mole on the chin?
May I take her, please?
Leclerc's antique shop? Oh, yes. Oh, one moment, please. It's Mr. Fisher, Mr. Leclerc. He wants to speak to you about that shepherd.
Ah, yes. If you will excuse me.
Just a moment. Before you go, Mr. Leclerc... How much is she?
I will be with you in a minute, monsieur. Mr. Fisher...
Tell him he can't have her. I want her.
She is... $350, monsieur.
$350? That would have bought you a fur coat, Elizabeth. Paid 2 years of taxes on our house in Maplewood. Given us a vacation trip to South America. $350 was almost 4 weeks' salary. But I was like a man in a dream. The thing in my hand wasn't porcelain. It was something alive. Something terribly close and precious to me. I couldn't give it up, ever, to anybody.
Mr. Fisher is waiting for me, monsieur. Now, what shall I tell him?
Tell him and his collection to go to the devil. This shepherdess is mine. I took a walk that afternoon through Central Park. I was excited in a curious, have-to-find way. And now that I had her in my pocket, this precious, sad, beautiful thing, everything about me seemed sordid and ugly. I came home at last, but I had no sooner come there than I wanted to run away again. Our little house looked so bare and cold and dreary. I'd planned to show you the shepherdess, to break down and tell you. But, darling, when you came to the door, forgive me. You seem suddenly like a stranger. Elizabeth, it was a malady. It was something I couldn't resist. You must understand that. You've known me for 10 years. Have I ever been a nervous man, a jittery man? And yet, from that day forward, all sorts of little things began to drive me crazy. There was the telephone, for example. I jumped every time it rang as though it was something new and unfamiliar. There were the auto horns. Suddenly they seemed twice as loud and terrifying. There was the incessant, irritating drone of airplanes in the sky. The dusty clatter of subways. Everything in the world seemed to be growing harsher and more jarring. I was happy only when I was alone. In very quiet places, in very old places, like the still stone rooms of the Metropolitan Museum, or the graveyard of St. Paul's. I was happy only with old things. With clocks, all grimy with dust, with pewter candlesticks, with furniture from which the gilt and paint had long since fallen away. I began to buy these things, secretly, to lay them away where she was hidden, under a pile of old clothes in the front part of our attic. I began to read books that brought me nearer these things, books on the 18th century. I haunted antique stores, auctions, old houses. And last night, Elizabeth, at an auction, I discovered for sure how deep my malady really lay.
And now we come to item number 35. A handsome so-called Lowestoft plate of the 18th century. Slightly cracked, with a design of blue and yellow cloth.
I had dropped in at the Park Bernay Galleries. They were holding an auction that night of 18th century China. I'd been standing at the back of the room for about half an hour when somebody tapped me on the shoulder.
Good evening.
I turned around. Before me stood an old man with thin, rather long white hair and nose glasses. I'd never seen him before.
My name is Fisher, Ludwig Fisher. We have met before, no?
I'm sorry, I don't quite recall. My name's Simpson, Verdon Simpson.
Mr. Simpson, are you not the gentleman who purchased the little Meissen shepherdess in Lefleur's antique shop 6 months ago?
Well, yes, I am.
Ah, then pray permit me to introduce myself once more, Mr. Simpson. I am Ludwig Fischer, your rival for that charming piece. I, too, collect Meissen, and I, too, wish to buy her.
Well, I'm glad to meet you.
And I, you. I have always had a great, a very great curiosity to meet the gentleman who purchased that delightful and most curious little work of art.
Curious?
But shall we go outside, Mr. Simpson? It is very warm in here and not good for speaking. Or do you wish to bid on that foolish board?
No, I wasn't bidding.
Good. I perceive you have good taste in more ways than one. You collect Meissen, Mr. Simpson?
No, not exactly. Just that one piece.
Uh-huh.
Rather curious. Your knowing that I bought that shepherdess. Even remembering my name so many months afterward.
Oh, not at all. Mr. Lefleur told me your name. And the little shepherdess which you purchased is one of the rarest things of its kind in existence. I am attached to it for many reasons. That is why, naturally, I would be interested to know who snatched her away from me.
Snatched her?
Well, please, sir, do not misinterpret me, Mr. Simpson. I feel no resentment toward you. To the victor belong the spoil. But that little shepherdess is one of the most famous figurines ever made. Excuse me, are you walking my way, Mr. Simpson?
I don't know. I haven't anything to do this evening.
I live on 58th Street near the river. If you care to, I have histories, a great deal of interesting information at home.
I'll walk you over.
Excellent.
I had the feeling, even as we started down 57th Street, with its lighted shops, its hurrying people, I had the feeling that I was on the brink of something sinister and frightening. It was raining, a thin drizzle. The same kind of rain that had fallen on that night when I had first seen her.
You say then, Mr. Simpson, you know nothing, absolutely nothing about the marvelous little work of art which you have purchased?
Nothing except what Mr. Lefleur told me.
And what was that?
That she was made by Kendler, I think it was. Sometime around 1775.
Oh, poof. She was made by Candler, that is right, but he told you nothing more?
No.
That shows you how much these art dealers know. She was the last thing ever to be made by Candler, the great Meissen artist, before he died.
Oh, I see.
She was to have been his masterpiece, his swan song to the world. I say, was to have been. That is the rather tragic thing about your shepherdess, Mr. Simpson. The art piece of which she was to have been a part was never carried through. The dream of the artist was never finished.
I don't quite understand you.
No, no, you would not, perhaps, unless you knew the story. Have you never heard of Aristide Dubois?
Dubois? Oh, Dubois, yes, I have. He's a composer. Plays the harpsichord and has two daughters.
He was an obscure composer of the 18th century, and he had two daughters, that is right. You have heard, perhaps, of the younger one, Antoinette.
Antoinette.
She was named for the Queen of France, and according to 18th century history, she was three times as beautiful. Now, you do not know her story in its own way. It is a very famous one. But then, if you are not a historian...
Please, go on.
Well, she fell in love when she was 18 with a flute player in her father's orchestra. Her father, who had bigger hopes for her, forbade the marriage and sent her off to a convent. She escaped and by various means arrived back at the palace and disguised as a shepherdess, she... Oh, but here we are.
Hmm? Where?
At my house. Come in, won't you, Mr. Simpson?
We'd arrived at an old brownstone house, set in the middle of a quiet street, near the fog-hung river. It was dark. I didn't want to go in. For some reason, I didn't want to hear any more of his story. Yet, something impelled me to follow him. We went up the steep stone stairs into a pitch black hallway. He lit a match.
You will observe, Mr. Simpson, that my whole house is lit with candles. It shows off my collection much better.
One by one in that ghostly silent hallway, he lit candle after candle until the whole place was ablaze with light. Then he went into an enormous front parlor. There were candles there, too. And he lit them, and I saw that the room was full of glass cases, great tall cabinets, in which stood porcelain figurines of every size, shape, and design. In one corner, an old clock ticked. The room was musty, overpowering, with its countless little toys. And yet, darling, horribly familiar.
Sit down, won't you? Some coffee?
No, thank you. You were saying...
Oh, yes, yes. I was saying about Dubois' younger daughter, Antoinette. She escaped from the convent and returned to the palace disguised as a shepherdess. A fancy dress ball was being given. Her lover was playing the flute solo in a piece of her father's. It was a great moment for the composer, a triumph before all the court. But the flute player recognized his sweetheart. He stopped short in the middle of his solo. He stared, he hesitated. He could not go on. And in that moment, with all the court looking on, the father knew. He turned, saw his daughter, saw a double disgrace staring him in the face, and in a mad rage... For he was a violent man and an egotist. He rushed upon the player and struck him to the heart with a ceremonial sword. The daughter... But, Mr. Simpson, you're looking so pale. Shall I open the window?
No, no, it's all right. Please go on. You were saying.
Well, that's all there is to the story. And quite a famous little bit of 18th century scandal it is. But the real point is that Candler took it as a theme for his swan song, his final work of art.
Yes.
It was the last thing he planned before he died, and a charming conceit it was, too. There were to be the two lovers executed in porcelain, one to stand on either side of a fireplace. Antoinette was to be dressed as a shepherdess, and the flute player as a shepherd playing the flute.
Yes.
But only The little shepherdess, the figure that you purchased, Mr. Simpson, was ever finished.
Ah.
He sketched the two figures in his sketchbook, and in a moment I will show you the old drawings of them he made. But he died before he could create the shepherd. Sad, isn't it?
Sad.
You know, even in porcelain, those two poor young lovers were never united.
No.
Only in this little pencil sketch which Kendler made. Only in this were they ever together. Would you like to see the drawing, Mr. Simpson?
Please.
The drawing, Mr. Simpson. Charming, are they not? Is not the drawing like your little shepherdess? Perfect. Perfect in every way.
Yeah.
And have you noticed something else, Mr. Simpson? It has just struck me. It is quite amusing how very much the little shepherd's face resembles yours. You remember how I was sure I knew you at the auction tonight? Well, but where are you going, Mr. Simpson?
If you don't mind, I'd like to open the window.
Oh, but certainly it really is quite stuffy in here. And then we must have some coffee.
Elizabeth, I don't know what it means. I can't explain it. I know only that there's dust upon it, and corruption and terrible sadness. I walked last night, up and down 57th Street, up and down, trying to fight it, trying to disbelieve the memories. But they crowded in on me. The voices, the faces, the very rustle of silks and the smell of tallow, and sedan chairs and theaters. They crowded in above the honking of the taxis, the rumble of subways. I saw her world last night completely. I felt the pull of her upon me more powerfully than anything I have ever known. But I don't want to go back. If I go back, what will it be to? What? That's what I keep asking myself. Where will it be? Do you think this drivel, Elizabeth? Do you think I need a doctor, or can you find it in your heart to understand, to forgive me? I need you, darling. Believe me, now more than I've ever needed you before. I don't understand what's happened. But as surely as I know everything I've said is true, I have a feeling we can conquer it. So, darling, do for me what I have not the courage or the heart to do. Go up there quickly. She's in the front part of the attic under a pile of old clothes. Destroy her in any way you wish, but destroy her so that not a fragment of her remains. I warn you that she's beautiful. That she's the rarest bit of meissen in the world. But until she is destroyed forever, the man you call your husband is only dust. And the shadow of a love 200 years old.
Listening to the Columbia Workshop production of Someone Else by Lucille Fletcher. The part of Simpson was played by Martin Gable. He was assisted by Helen Clare, Margot Stevenson, Stefan Schnabel, Julian Noah, and Carl Emery. The music was composed by the 18th century court musician André Compre and conducted by Bernard Herrmann. The entire production was directed by Earl McGill. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.